Hey, this is Laura.
And Steven.
And this is our podcast, Midday Musings, where we take our lunch break to talk about the things that are on our mind. Today, we're talking about nature, technology, and human civilization. What do everyday millennials have in common with Henry David Thoreau? What's motivating the cottagecore trend? And what does an ecologically conscious future look like? Let's get into it. Hey there, Steven.
Hey, Laura.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well. I'm living my life and I'm here. I'm surviving.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Like we don't want a dead Steven.
No.
He couldn't podcast anymore.
No, although I could do more things as a ghost. So don't tempt me.
You're like, I could leave this life behind.
I could.
Untethered to my squishy mortal body.
Untethered from this mortal coil. No, but I'm doing pretty well, actually. Mm. How about yourself?
I am way too caffeinated. And I am dealing with the after effects of my choice to be so caffeinated.
Oh, that's exciting.
Here's the trouble. If you add sugar to coffee, the coffee just disappears.
Oh, yeah.
Regular coffee can be sipped. As would be desirable.
Yeah.
To just sip the little bean juice that fills you with the energy. But then you add some like condensed milk to a cold brew. You stir that baby up. Gone. Yeah. Gone in 60 seconds.
Oh, you know what I like. That sounds beautiful. That sounds delicious, actually.
It was beautiful, but now I feel terror. I feel an unfocused sense of alarm.
I'm reminded of that email that someone accidentally sent. They meant to say, "Dear Jacob, I'm afraid I can't fulfill your request," but they accidentally just sent, "Dear Jacob, I am afraid."
Oh, yes. That's an internet classic.
Yeah.
I think about it often.
So now you're just buzzing with caffeine and you feel the fear of being fully caffeinated.
Yeah. I feel the full force of my squishy human body. Which is not prepared to deal with the pointy human world.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. In that case, do you think maybe you would want to explore the outside? Maybe you want to return to nature?
Wish to return to nature?
I don't know. I don't think you do, but I'm curious.
Have the PNW bears gotten to you?
No, they have not. Okay, here's the thing. I love my bears. I love my PNW bears.
Who doesn't?
They love to be outside. They love to live in the woods. And I respect that. However, personally, I was just talking about this with someone this morning. I am a big proponent of nature is beautiful, nature is lovely. However, nature is also trying to actively kill you all the time. Like even in your own house, if you don't scrub your kitchen for like a couple days, things will start to accumulate. If you don't
Nature
will come to you. You don't do that for a month, you're going to have a problem. You don't do that for a year, like nature will come to you. It will take over your house. Like within 1 year, your whole house will just be invaded by nature. Nature wants to take you back.
It does. Yeah. We are experiencing right now a resurgence of interest in the return to the woods aesthetic, the sort of Walden Pond resurgence crew.
Yeah.
I think it's really funny. I think it's really funny because the last time Americans got this interested in returning to the woods was the last Industrial Revolution.
Oh,
so like
really?
The turn of the 19th to 20th century, Walden Pond comes out then. And it's Henry David Thoreau basically receding from urban areas because the urban areas were getting industrialized and everyone was living in tight little spaces and tenements and factory work and so on and so forth. And we're at another period of intense technological incursion, I guess.
Development, but yeah.
Development. I would argue that some would call it an incursion.
Oh, yeah.
But we have like the digital world and all of the technologies that come alongside it just beamed into our lives with ferocity. And so naturally, a large group of millennials, Gen Zs, and probably Gen Alphas are like, I think the woods, cottagecore / make my own bread / feed my local deer, like that vibe is really attractive.
Yeah.
But I remember the 2000s era show Life After People, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was on History Channel, and it basically had the premise that we don't know exactly why the world ended, but for some reason, this day to this day, all the human beings disappear. What happens to the world that we leave behind?
Yeah.
And it does not even take 2 years for like creeping ivy plants to take over the entirety of the infrastructure nearby them.
Yeah.
And so I know that nature always lies in wait. You don't have to seek it out. It will come to you.
Right. I'm on the same page because to me, nature is always trying to come for you. So So I don't have to find it. It will find me eventually. I love that thought of 2 years, people are gone from the earth and all of the vines are just covering the entire earth. It's a terrifying thought to me as a human, but it's interesting to think that nature will just take back the space. We think we're so big, we're so people-y, and we're like, well, look at all the impact we have on the world. Look at all the things we've changed. But if we were gone 2 years from now, nature would just reclaim all of that space and be like, well, that was fun. And now nature will resume its course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of maintenance that has to take place to keep the like iron fist grip humanity has over the global ecosystem. Everyone every day is doing a lot of work to maintain it. Gardeners are our first defense.
Right.
No,
gardeners, plumbers, housekeepers, just people who are keeping
city employees.
Yeah, because what we're doing is we're fighting entropy. Nature is a force of entropy.
So ivy's going to take over in a very short period of time because it grows so quickly.
Yeah.
The good news is that a lot of colleges are going to suddenly become better
because they
will be Ivy League.
Every college will be Ivy League.
College will be Ivy League.
Even your community colleges will be covered in ivy.
Yeah, to me, this is the great democratizing of higher education.
Yes, yes, yes.
All it takes is 2 years free of humans, and immediately the educational institutions are all deeply prestigious.
And then the mole rats and the gophers will start using those schools, and they'll be like, look, everyone, every mole rat and gopher has an Ivy League education. I'm assuming mole rats and gophers because they were underground.
Mm-hmm.
In this scenario, I guess it's a nuclear fallout situation.
No, probably. It doesn't even matter. It's like everybody has disappeared.
But that's why they've survived. So all the people, nuclear fallout. So the moles and gophers come out and now they have Ivy League schools.
Yeah, they're walking out of there with degrees from the greatest institutions Earth has to offer. Engineering degrees, great works of history and literature.
Oh, dude, actually, what would be amazing is if, obviously it wouldn't be great if humanity disappeared, but if they did, what if all of our works were left intact? Like the power grid was left intact. We basically just poofed, you know, all of the, like our libraries of Alexandria were left intact. And the new species that runs the planet, whether it's gophers, mole rats, or pigs or whatever, has access to that. And like they had higher functioning, like reasoning due to the fallout that has happened. How quickly do you think they would develop?
I wonder how much their stuff would look like our stuff.
Yeah, right. It'd probably be different because a lot of them are, at least the ones I mentioned, they're quadrupedal, they're not bipedal, and they don't really have thumbs. So I think they would have different things. They'd make smaller things.
Definitely smaller things and probably things that were subtly different, like had different ergonomic designs.
Oh, yeah.
I always think about like the little like blank period of time, like the ancient dark ages between the Bronze Age collapse and then like the rise of the Hellenistic Age. Mm. Because for like 500, 600 years, you have the battle gutted great civilizations that are totally visually accessible to everyone who's still living around. It's just the civilizations don't have the maintenance staff to keep up those civilizations with the exception of Egypt. So you just have like 6 or 7 lost civilizations and people grow up around all of these ruins, this wreckage. And I wonder what they thought about it. I know that some people thought that there used to be giants because of how large the buildings were. And I think that's cute.
Yeah.
But the gophers would have a well-founded belief that giants were around because we are much larger than them.
Right? They're like, oh my gosh, these guys were huge. And we're like,
they had extra fingers. Look at that thumb.
How did that happen? It's got me thinking about Horizon Zero Dawn for some reason, which is, again, it's another...
No, because it's the same idea, right? It's the Dark Age following the end of whatever our civilization is.
No, it is. It's totally a Dark Age. So in this game, the world has ended due to some reason. Actually, in this case, it's a robot war that ended it.
Oh, that's a good apocalypse too.
Yeah, the robots have gained sentience. Spoiler alert for a game that is, again, 5-10 years old. But the robots have gained sentience and they have, well, they were instructed by humans to optimize themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And they realize the best way they can do that is by killing all the people. And they're like, well, you got what you wanted. We are optimized. So
I mean, bold, but not original.
Yeah. So all the robots have somehow they've like become animal-esque, but humans exist and they're hunting them and they're discovering like 1,000-year-old tech, which to us is just like an iPhone. They're like, what was this block for? That's so weird. All this ancient tech, the technology of the ancients, they call it.
Oh, yeah. Their goal is like that of the Enclave. Yeah. In Fallout, which brings us back to
the Brotherhood of Steel.
Well, the Brotherhood of Steel, you're right, is trying to find it. In my mind, the ones in Horizon Zero Dawn inside the old facilities, that to me is the Enclave.
Ah, gotcha, gotcha. No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
But going back to the point, all of these people at the PNW who love hiking and going out into nature, they're very Thoreauian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They reject technology. They embrace nature. Actually, I also think whenever I think about these guys and then go back to Walden Pond, I go back even farther to like the initial romantics. Mm-hmm. People don't really like talk about this, but Marie Antoinette was like a major romantic.
Oh, really?
She would leave Versailles and go to her little castle, her tiny castle, on the grounds to hang out with her friends in nature. But they were all like reading Rousseau, thinking of like the virtues of the natural. And this coincided with a pretty major technological evolution in baking. Like all of those frothy little pastries that are associated with Marie Antoinette and the French court, that was available to them because of advances in baking technology.
Nice.
So even within that former world, pre-industrial revolution, there was still a reaction to modernism that was the regressing back into the natural.
You know, that does happen a lot. And I think you're right. That is a lot of what's happening. Technology is advancing a lot. And because of its advancements, it's actually pretty overwhelming. I sort of agree. It is a bit invasive. It's a bit intrusive.
I'm going to go look at a tree about it.
Right? Because every single device that I have has the ability to notify me whenever anything in the world happens, unless I tell it not to. And that is overwhelming. My watch does it. My phone does it. My TV could potentially do it if I wanted it to. But
true.
But that's just too much. Like, you just get constantly bombarded with information. And I'm actually kind of averse to the buzzing sound. Like, I have a negative reaction to hearing zzz, zzz, like, what is it? Stop.
Good.
Stop.
Good.
Jesus, stop.
We're conditioning you well.
Yeah. So no, I get it. I get the impulse because technology is a little bit overwhelming.
No, it's a completely reasonable, yeah, understandable, totally, and arguably natural impulse. I'm not here to criticize either the people who think that they're reinventing the wheel by walking in nature or the people who think they're reinventing the wheel by wanting to become cyborgs. This is just what people do.
Yeah.
We try to fly to the edges of what is technologically possible and push into new horizons because we must. It's a pathology of the species. Mm-hmm. And we also get really overwhelmed by our own ambition and the products of our ambition.
Yeah.
So we like run screaming back to Mother Nature and look at a tree about
right?
it.
Like, we created the internet and smartphones and all of these smart tech devices and we go, good God, what have we done? What have we wrought upon humanity?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
too much.
My favorite Sophocles quote is, right?
It's funny because that's our cat's name.
That is our cat's name. Our cat's named Sophocles because I like Sophocles. But this is my favorite quote of his, which is, nothing vast enters the mind of man without a curse.
Mm. Oh, that hits.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Hits.
Dude, that was written 2,000 years ago, but it still hits.
Nothing new
enters, nothing vast.
Nothing vast enters the mind of man without a curse. Oh my gosh. Dude, he was ahead of his time. Ahead of his time. But I guess that just tells us that that's timeless. Wow.
Yeah, humans so be humaning this that? Whole time. Like, we come up with the most brilliant ideas and we are strangely good at manifesting them into the physical reality that we humans share. Mm. And human ambition is horrifying to look at directly in the face.
Yeah. You kind of wonder, how deep does it go? How deep does the chasm of human ambition go?
There is no bottom. No. That's the magic of it.
Mm-mm. It makes me think of Jurassic Park. They spent so much time trying to figure out if they could, they didn't stop to think if they should. And that's true. That's all of us, you know? And I've worked at a lot of different companies, yeah. And so few of them have anything more than like a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan. And I'm like, why? You know, I think about companies like JP Morgan Chase, mm-hmm. and Nintendo, or the Stanley Company, which, by the way, we found out from Rainy Day Rabbit Holes podcast, the guy who made the Stanley Company and the guy who made JP Morgan Stanley are related, and they both created 100-year plus companies. And mm-hmm. I wonder if there was just more long-term planning considered. And I wonder why don't more companies think more long-term? Why isn't that a consideration?
Family cultures used to be a larger deal. Mm. And certainly the Morgan Stanley family is a famous American family with the idea in their heads that they have a legacy. And so they act accordingly.
Mm. No, that makes sense.
It's similar to how the Roosevelt family was a very big deal for a while. And continues to be, really. But they produced two presidents,
yeah,
who were related, and other generations of civic-minded individuals. And this, I don't know, this is emblematic of an older time, like a more mm-hmm. traditional society where your family name matters, your mm-hmm. family culture is actioned by every individual in the family. But modern companies, modern people, we're a lot more short-term thinky, we're a lot more socially mobile. We just think different.
Yeah, we think about
what. And we also have the pressures of a unique stock market culture post 1980s.
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't know. I think humans were kind of thinking a little more short to midterm these days, but you know who's always thinking long term? Nature.
Nature always thinks long term. Yeah, I actually think that the short term planning is the result of modernism, because mm-hmm. countries used to have 100-year plans, 200-year plans. But then after the second industrial revolution, it became very clear very quickly that the world was changing so fast. Mm-hmm. You couldn't anticipate the conditions of 100 years from now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So why make a plan for it? And the answer is because plans are great.
One quote I recall, which I think is very relevant here, is it's not important that you have a plan that you uh-huh. stick to, but it's important that you do planning, because mm-hmm. whatever plan you create isn't set in stone. It's not guaranteed, but just the fact that you do some kind of planning, even if it's not guaranteed, is so important. So I kind of respect nature for keeping that long-term plan. We're over here in the mid to short term, maybe long term, if we keep doing the right things, you know, to survive and live in harmony with nature and not destroy nature too much. Because I'm a firm believer that the more we do to damage the planet, the more the planet has kind of a white blood cell response to it, where it will push back and be like, all right, no, like stop people. Like, you can be here, but only if you chill with the rest of us.
Oh yeah, two things are certainly true. The first is that nature does respond.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
The second is that nature could be a super chill, friendly co-conspirator in human civilization with some adjustment to the way that we do yeah. things. And not honestly an enormous amount of adjustment. Like, we already have people learning about renewables, about the way that you can ecologically, responsibly engage with the ecology
yeah.
around you. And there are tons of different types of building materials that correspond to different climates that could be beneficial. We could all theoretically, if we wanted to, create a bunch of reefs at the bottom of the ocean, because we have concrete materials that work for the populations that wow. occupy coral reefs. Like, we could create houses that have porous building materials that allow nature to set up residence in the external walls.
I love that.
There are choices here. We just haven't seen those choices enacted at a notable industrial scale. But the efforts are there and people want it. You just have to incentivize the market, or just have someone with a vision who has incentivized themselves to interact differently with ecology than we have been.
So we have the technology to fix a lot of this stuff.
Singapore's fine. Yeah. Singapore builds with ecology in mind.
Yeah, we just need to have the right financial incentives. And you know what? That makes sense to me. Not because I think that's how it should be, but that's just the way it is. With the right financial incentives, people can do a lot of things. Like, there's technology out there to fix a lot of the problems, but it just needs to be properly marketed and properly funded. And some people might call that jaded or overly practical, but it's just the way it currently is. If you know that, you can make things better by putting those things in front of people who have the right funding and then having them go, yes, we should support this. Let me put this on the ballot or let me get this funded.
Oh, yeah. I also would say that if you get one sufficiently motivated party to model behavior that proves beneficial to that party, mm-hmm. you get a lot of copycats very quickly. Mm. And I think that's why everyone was really excited about the idea of Elon Musk 15 years ago, mm-hmm. because he seemed to be a type of person who was motivated to approach the problem of renewables in a new way. But capitalism comes for us all, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's worth noting that capitalism is a temporary economic state in the same way that absolutism, which preceded it, was. One day we will discover that we can't eat money and we'll have to change our tactics.
One of my favorite things that you see in the Fallout game series is that the currency is bottle caps, right?
Uh-huh.
And whenever you find paper money, like paper US dollars, it's mm-hmm. called pre-war money. And it is literally valueless in that economy 200 years after the bombs have fallen. Uh-huh. And there's nothing left of the old establishment. So it's like, yeah, you can't eat it. You can convert it to cloth and use it to fix things, but that's about it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's, and I would point out that Nuka-Cola has a very effective and aggressive recycling strategy keeping the bottle cap economy afloat.
Right? When I saw that, when I first played Fallout New Vegas, I was just enchanted by that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Paper money is meaningless because the economy has collapsed, and now bottle caps are the form of currency, and it's just charming. It's just freaking charming.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
So whenever you drink a Nuka-Cola, it's like, oh, now I have a dollar. That's fun.
Yeah. And whenever you go out into the wilds of nature to escape technology or mm-hmm. the nuclear fallout, you can always ask yourself, how could I make this my house?
Right. Well, that said, should we give the listeners back their lunch break?
Oh, yeah. We've done a lot of talking.
Yeah, we have. All right, folks. Well, we'll catch you on the next one. Don't be a stranger. Talk soon.
Bye.
Bye. This has been Steven.
And Laura.
Thanks for tuning into Midday Musings, the podcast where we talk about all the things on our mind. Be sure to follow us on Spotify and jump into the conversation in our polls and Q&As. We would love to hear from you. Catch you next lunch break.